Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Podcast to Be Named Later, the official podcast of OutfieldFlyRule.com. My name is Brent Blackwell. I'm here today with Chris Jervis.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing okay. Well, I should start off by saying that while this technically was a regularly scheduled podcast, it also has kind of surprisingly turned into sort of an emergency podcast for the Braves. This Monday has been more eventful than I imagined it would be.
Really? Something happened today?
Something did happen today. John Coppolella, general manager of the Atlanta Braves, has resigned. And it all happened really suddenly. First the news broke that he was going to resign. And then about 3 minutes later, the news broke that it was related to a Major League Baseball investigation into Coppolella's, not just Coppolella, but Atlanta's practices in the international free agent market, particularly Latin America, but I don't think exclusively Latin America. A lot of things have really, a lot of speculation, a lot of rumors, a lot of, unnamed sources and whatnot. But it's not a good day for the Atlanta Braves organization, to say the least.
Yeah, that sounds like there's a lot going on. I actually was out at lunch when it started going through. My phone had been quiet all day, and then all of a sudden, just notifications start blowing up left and right, start getting tagged in posts and people tweeting at me trying to figure out, hey, what's going on? I don't know. I don't know anything that's going on beyond what has been reported by, I think Ken Rosenthal reported some, Jeff Passan. A lot of good people have been all over this. I've noticed that former Brave employee Jeff Wren has been pretty active on Twitter today, kind of gloating would be maybe the word I would use. But to be fair to him, he did say some of this 2 weeks ago as well. He kind of hinted at a lot of this 2 weeks ago. So just to give a quick rundown, what all was going on? What all was the saying? So apparently the Braves were doing something untoward in the Latin American market. Apparently, at least according to others, I think Jeff Passan mentioned this, that it wasn't relegated to just Coppolella and the dealings in the Latin America free agent market, but also the way he interacted and treated some Braves employees. And that Gordon Blakely, I believe, was named as well. I think it was maybe Bob Nightingale, I can't remember, of USA Today, who mentioned Gordon Blakely may have been involved as well and is probably going to resign.
For those who don't know, Blakely is just an assistant to Coppolella.
And he came over from the New York Yankees, and Blakely was very, very active in the Yankees' international free agent dealings, particularly in the Far East, Korea and Japan, but also in Latin America as well. So he's pretty well versed in some of the goings on in how the Latin American free agent markets work. It'll be interesting to see really what was happening. I mean, we really don't know what exactly happened. If I had to speculate right now, and this is all it is pure speculation, I don't know. But I would guess the Braves were probably packaging deals where they would sign 2 and 3 players for obscene amounts of money so that they could get around the international free agent spending caps or the international free agent bonuses. We don't know yet which players were involved, if any. We don't know if it was the 2015, 16, 17 year. I would guess that it was 15 or 17, because if the Braves knew they were going to blow the market out of the water in 2016 when they signed Kevin Maitan, there was no incentive to do anything wrong because they were already going to blow past everything. So I don't know how that would play out.
I think there's a lot of early concern that Maitan is the first name that pops up on a lot of people's minds. And I don't want to rule out that possibility, because there is a possibility that they found something, improper about the way we went about signing Maitan. But I don't think it's just the money that was that went to him on July 2nd of 2016. I think if there's anything with Maitan, it would be very early on, because he was linked to Atlanta for a long time.
How many times did we hear that there was a handshake deal in place? Mm-hmm. And those handshake deals, Wait, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, I think we were about to say the same thing. Is that the concern is that there was some cash in those hands when the handshake when it right. well, it was took place. So I think that's the only concern there. But then again, I think that so many eyes were on Maitan and so many eyes were on the Braves at the time, and there were probably whispers at the time that I don't know. I don't necessarily expect them to have found anything there. I think Atlanta was probably pretty careful with how it handled that, even if they did do something untoward when it came to Maitan. My instinct is that the Braves were doing under the table things with other players to try to, it's those borderline prospects, those players who signed for right at the minimum, or right at not the minimum, but right at the maximum allotted for them in, say, 2015 or 2017.
And
it would not surprise me if they wound up with more money, is all.
Right. And I'm thinking, too, that it's probably more in line with the current market than a previous one, because baseball would have had plenty of time to review the transactions in those other deals. And this is apparently something that just started within the last several weeks, at least the investigation. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the infractions occurred then. That's just when it was reported, and apparently it was an anonymous source reported it to the Major League Baseball. But they've been looking into the practices for a few weeks now. And Bob Nightingale of USA Today tweeted today that this is something that not only is John Coppola resigning, but he's unlikely to surface in Major League Baseball again. So that's something that lets me believe that there's a pretty serious breach of some type there. I don't think it would be just circumventing cap rules. That's something that he goes away, does his penance, and then comes back down the road somewhere. If they're saying he doesn't yeah. come back into baseball again, you know, if there's speculation he doesn't return to baseball, you know, and I don't want to get into, you know, unfounded rumors or anything, but there are, you know, there's something, I think it was Jim Bowden was involved in, that pretty much has kept him out of front offices again. And it could be that it was something similar to that, where money that was allocated towards players maybe didn't make it to those players or whatever. I mean, you know, there's a lot of shady dealings when you're dealing with people who claim to be representatives of these players down in Latin America. I mean, some of these Dominican players, some of these Venezuelan players, they have not just the agents that they're dealing with, but they also have so-called, they call them buscadores, which are representatives who go out and find them teams to sign with. And they act as their representatives as well. And they're not credentialed representatives in any way. A lot of times they're just stealing this money from the kids. You know, the kids might sign a supposed deal for X million dollars or X thousand dollars, and some of that money doesn't make it back to them because these representatives, so to speak, are taking some of it from themselves, you know, finder's fee or whatever they call it. But I would think that the fact that Nightingale said he may not be returning to baseball indicates that it's a pretty significant violation of some sort. You know, so we'll have to see how it all plays out. You know how these things happen. You know, there's immediate speculation that's probably somewhat ancillarily related to what actually happened, and the real story comes out down the road.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I think we can assume is that there's definitely a smoking gun somewhere that MLB found, because it's so rare for the resign or the resignation day to occur before details start trickling out, really. And compared to most like internal organizational investigations, there have not been many details on this surrounding the Braves. I mean, we've heard some rumors of infighting in the organization over the past few weeks, and that people aren't getting along, and that there's been some turmoil, but I don't think any of us expected this. And then you compare that to a situation like the Cardinals hacking scandal, where that came out, that was all over Deadspin weeks before the St. Louis.
Before the story broke with St. Louis.
Front office guy. Well, just before they pinpointed who it was and what happened, and before the person got terminated. And though he's now in jail, I don't want to compare this to that necessarily. I don't know of any criminal activity that the Braves have done, but it is similar in a baseball scandal sense. in that I think this could be pretty bad. If he's already resigning before the news even
right, and especially because another executive has been named as well, as we saw reportedly with Gordon Blakely.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. It's a lot of wait and see at this point.
Hurry up and
see what comes out.
Exactly.
And yeah, the sooner MLB, I'm guessing that MLB was pretty far along in their investigation and that we may get to hear the outcome of that fairly soon, because there's no sense in that going on and on, because at some point the team has to move on and start down the path to paying its penance and also just moving right. on.
Well, it was definitely not something that anybody expected. I mean, nobody could expect anything like this, but like you said, sometimes you get a kind of a hint that something's swirling and, you know, you can kind of see the smoke from the fire or the smoke ahead of the fire, but there was nothing like that. I mean, this literally came just out of the blue today. So I don't know how the Braves are going to go forward. I don't know how this affects manager Brian Snitker. I know there was some talk about some infighting. You mentioned it very briefly, you know, and I'd seen speculation today that some of that infighting may have been people who didn't approve of the way that Coppola was doing certain things. Now, one other thing, you know, Coppola, whether he did right, whether he did wrong, you know, clearly he did wrong because he's gone. I mean, and he was given no opportunity to not be gone. He is gone. But the Braves do have, at least for right now, the number one farm system since his arrival, or has rebuilt it into the number one farm system since his arrival. If it stays that way, you know, kind of remains to be seen. I don't think that we are at risk of having high profile players, you know, turned back into free agents. But again, I have no way of knowing that. But that makes this job, this now open Atlanta Braves GM job, a pretty coveted position. It's a spot that any up-and-coming GM who wants to make a name for himself, or even an older GM, might want to slide into, because now they're moving in on the tail end of a rebuild with a stacked farm system. And they can kind of move in and put their stamp on everything and ride the wave.
It's an ideal. I was just going to agree with you. It's an ideal situation for a new GM that never happens, because normally if an organization sticks with a GM through a rebuild, they give them a couple of years of kind of pushing their chips in to see how that looks. And so usually if you're a new GM somewhere, you're either taking over for some a GM who got fired for putting together awful products with no help, bright outlook for the future, or you're just taking over for a retiring GM who probably had some success and things are kind of already built right. for you. So this is a rare situation for GM candidates to be able to step in just when the window is starting.
And we've already seen some speculation that Dayton Moore may get a phone call. You know, Dayton Moore, formerly of the Braves, currently the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, seen his name thrown around. You know, there's also, you know, some in-house candidates. The Braves brought in a couple of executives just 2 weeks ago from, I believe it was the Mets and the Blue Jays. And at the time, we didn't really discuss it that much. We talked about it a little bit on the Facebook group, on the OFR Facebook group, that, you know, it's hard to say what those moves actually meant, because this is the time of year when teams are doing things. But the two guys they brought in, one of them was a director of baseball operations from the Mets, and the other one was a scout and kind of a director of player personnel guy from the Blue Jays. And it kind of makes you wonder if those guys were brought in anticipation of something like this happening, because suddenly the Braves lose a GM and a player personnel guy as part of this this little incident today. So it looks like whoever brought them in, whether that be Hart or Schuerholz or whoever, seem to have some kind of inclination that things may go south. So they at least were looking forward. It didn't completely, I don't think, catch them by utter surprise, judging by some of the moves they made. But at the same time, nobody counts on having to get rid of a GM halfway through a rebuild or exiting a rebuild. The only thing I was seeing that maybe Jeff Passan had also said of Yahoo Sports said that this would be a nice location or a nice destination for a potential GM if Hart went also. So apparently there's still some thinking out there that with Hart looking over the shoulder, that an established GM may not want the job simply because he might feel like he's being second-guessed all the way around. So I don't know how that's going to play out in terms of filling the new GM spot or filling the GM spot with a new person. I don't know. This might make you laugh. I don't even think I mentioned this to you before we went on the air. I had seen Jonathan Scherholz's name out there as a potential GM candidate. So, yes.
Of course.
So that was from a writer in the Atlanta area. But, you know, I don't know how this is going to play out. It was just kind of, this happened like literally an hour or two before we decided to go on the air. So, you know, we're kind of flying blind in it too.
Mm-hmm.
Details are scarce.
Yeah. Now, I get the feeling that John Hart is, I think he would be fairly hands off if he brought in an experienced person. But at the same time, it wouldn't stun me if somebody decided to let Hart go because he's the reason Coppy was here. So,
right.
You know, he's the reason Coppy was here.
Yeah, he may have been the check against Coppy. So, you know, now that Capolella's not here, there might not need to be a reason for Hart to be here. They may keep him on. He's supposed to be, his contract's supposed to end at the end of the year, but he may come back for another year just for transition purposes, maybe because of all this that's going on. But I don't know. We'll see how everything works. There are plenty of capable people out there. I hope this doesn't set the rebuild back any further. I hope that whoever steps in can step in and continue whatever progress has been made. And, you know, I hope that it's somebody that is allowed to make their own decisions, whether it be who the manager is or who's on the roster, without undue influence from anybody, whether that be undue influence from Hart or Cox or Scherholz or other parties who are all involved and all want to have, everybody wants to see the team do well, but at some point you have to have one person who's accountable and willing to take the blame and to take the action. So I hope we get to that point. So yeah. That was today.
Yeah. So, you know, stay tuned on the Coppolella situation. We don't really have a whole lot of information and we don't want to do too much speculating right now either. Just to say that there's going to be a new era in Atlanta, sort of unexpectedly.
Whether we like it or not, it's here.
that'll be different from, and while Coppolella, I think, was well-liked by a lot of Braves fans because of the way he remade the farm system the way he did, I will also stress that we don't know how good he would have been at assembling major league rosters. So, I mean, he hasn't been amazing at it so far, and I don't think his major league moves have been as wildly successful as his prospect-oriented moves have been. He did acquire Ender Inciarte for virtually nothing, but beyond that, the major league additions have not been amazing. And there's no guarantee that he would have made the right calls in the next stage, because I think a lot of people could do the job that he did in when it comes to just putting together smart people, letting them make good choices in the draft, because it seems like we've been one of the better drafting teams for the past few years. But assembling minor league talent is easy when you're willing to lose 90 games a year. It's easier. And so the Braves were able to do that, and it's necessary. It's the hardest thing about it is just convincing ownership and fans that you need to. And we were able to do that. Fans, for the most part, bought in to the rebuild, and the organization clearly bought in. So I think that we did the right thing, but I don't think it was that hard of a thing to do. Because, I mean, it does happen around the game. The White Sox have done it over the last year because, yeah, that's a thing that teams have to do from time to time. And I don't think it's a huge setback today in the sense of Coppy's vision for the future. I think today is a huge setback just for the organization because there may be sanctions that come down from it. But when it comes to the process of the rebuild, what we knew Coppy was good at was pretty much already done and in place. So it was going to be sort of a new proving ground going forward anyway, for Coppola. And so now it's just somebody else will have to do that proving. But yeah, that's about the extent of how
that's going to make today. The winter meetings and the GM meetings a little bit strange for Atlanta this year. That's going to maybe affect how they approach free agency this year. So there's a whole lot of impact to this beyond just the immediate, hey, your general manager's gone. So I don't know. We'll see. The Braves have a lot of moves. They have potentially a lot of moves to make this offseason in terms of players to bring back. There's only two options, I believe. I believe it's Dickey and Tyler Flowers are the only two options they have to decide besides Snicker. I think Tyler Flowers is a no-brainer. We talked about that last week. And Dickey seems, at least based on what I've seen in the interviews and the interviews he's done and him turning down the final start of the season, probably will not come back. It seems like he might be leaning towards retiring, at least based on his actions. And then the Snicker decision, you know, it seems like I read today that the Braves were going to decide on him this week. Whether they announce that decision or not this week is another story.
So let's give a quick timeline for like what we should do. So the first decisions of the offseason will be Dickey, if he's a decision at all, and Flowers, which also should not be much of a decision to make. It's fairly simple. I think we're in complete agreement that Tyler Flowers will be brought back. But those are the first decisions of the offseason. You typically are options and whether they're picked up or not. That happens the week after the World Series is over, if I'm not mistaken. And also you have to worry about given, normal teams have to decide if they want to make a qualifying offer to anybody. But let's see, who's our best player that could be eligible for a qualifying offer? Is it Josh Kallmenter? Is he the best current Atlanta Brave that is hitting free agency?
It would have been
he even a current Brave. I don't even know. If we had held on to Jaime Garcia, maybe.
That one might not have been. That one would have been iffy, I think. I mean, it's going to run about 18.1 to 18.5 million, something like that.
Whew. Yeah, I don't think I'd offer Garcia.
I think that's
that.
What it's going to be this year. And you run the risk of him saying, okay. And then, I just don't think that Garcia was fine. He wasn't 18 million fine. Brandon Phillips was the same way.
So I guess so. We've got that coming up in about a month. That's when the offseason is really going to start. Is we're going to need somebody in place making those decisions. So let's say, I know John Hart is taking over in the interim. I imagine John Hart will be making the Snicker call this week on his own. Okay. So when do you expect a new GM to be hired by? Like, can we afford to wait for Major League Baseball to finish their investigation and for that to come to light? Or does Atlanta pretty much know where the investigation sits? And would a new GM candidate coming in know who's staying, who's going, or at least who has to go?
First, you have to wait for the playoffs to end. Because if somebody that you want to talk to works for a playoff team, you really can't interfere while that team's in the playoffs. So I think that's probably our earliest start point, unless the person you want to target is not on a playoff team, in which case maybe they're unemployed right now that the season's over, or they want to get a promotion now that the season's over. But I think probably they're going to wait and talk to some folks who are involved in playoff teams with playoff teams. So we have to wait until that's over. You also have, I think the Braves probably would want to go to the to Major League Baseball and say, look, can we get an idea of what the sanctions are going to be so that we can let people know this is what you're going to be dealing with? I don't know how many people are going to be willing to jump on board the train if they know that the train's going to hit some potholes along the way and they just don't know how big the potholes are. So I think the Braves kind of want to have an idea of sanctions before they really push for it. But is Major League Baseball going to be ready to give that information? You know, will they have finished everything at that point? So I really don't know. The worst case for Atlanta is they don't get a GM, but they have John Hart, who has been a GM and has effectively served as sort of like the advanced GM for the last year or two. They have somebody who can fill that role if they have to have it. But I think they want to have their guy in place so that there could be some stability moving forward, like we were talking about with stability last year. The question is if you know you're going to have a new GM, and most GMs like to have their own people, can you make the decision on Snitker this week? Well, you could probably make the easy decision, which means you hire a new GM who's going to hire his own manager. I don't know. That's a hard one. That's a hard one to call.
I mean, maybe the best thing to do is just to decline Snitker's option and then encourage the other GM to, or whoever you hire as GM, to interview Snitker, to at least sit down with him. And I think that might be the best thing. Also, tell Snitker if he wants to go interview elsewhere, do it, man. I mean, I would be if I were Snitker right now. I know a lot of people make a big deal about him being in the Braves organization for 40 years, but, you know, there's a chance that there's going to be a new GM who comes in and fires you anyway. If the Phillies are offering you their job, or if the Mets are offering you their job, are there any openings outside of the National League East? I don't even know. Yeah, if Detroit wants to offer him a job, why not? Go for it. That's what I would say. Although, boy, those are not the most encouraging situations for if Snitker's probably tired of this rebuild stuff, and Detroit is.
Well, I don't think Dave Roberts is going anywhere. So that kind of narrows down the options of walking into a World Series. You know, Joe Maddon's not going anywhere. So I don't know how they're going to fill or when they're going to fill the position. I would think they would want to do it sooner rather than later, but I think there are some logistical issues if they want to interview guys who are involved with playoff teams. So that means they either have to choose from a different pool or they have to wait. But if you wait too long, then you start getting into GM meetings and off-season, you know, hot stove stuff where guys are signing contracts and things like that. I think they would want to have, they would want to have somebody in place.
Yeah, you can't miss that.
So, I mean, just we were talking earlier, the Braves themselves, just looking at the guys that are coming back, the Braves have holes to fill. Not a lot of them. I mean, the Braves have a lot of bodies that they can plug in. But if they're legitimately concerned with or legitimately serious about, you know, adding one or two bullpen arms, legitimate bullpen arms, not just bodies, and adding maybe a third baseman who is not just a, you know, a platoon option or a fill in the blank until X person is ready option, then they're going to have somebody to lead those negotiations, to go out there and talk to those people. So I think they're going to probably do something. I don't want to say soon, but I would say at least in the midterm. I don't think they're going to wait too terribly long on it.
I think it's got to be in place by November. I think they've got this month to find a new GM. And my guess is that As closely as they're working with Major League Baseball to participate in this investigation, to, you know, cooperate, I guess is the better word. I think that they're going to know pretty much where they stand, and I think that's key when you're hiring a new GM. Because a new GM is going to, I think they'll still sign on if there's sanctions coming ahead, but they just want to know. They just want to know when they're meeting with Atlanta, and they want to know what they're signing up for. And my guess is at this point, maybe John Hart has a good idea of what the next GM will be signing up for. And with that in mind, I think we're going to see us try to fill this GM position during the playoffs. Maybe it's the first time. Maybe we hire an assistant away from, you know, some playoff team. Hey, maybe we're the team that finally gives Kim Ng her first shot at being a general manager. She's been like the Dodgers assistant
regarded.
GM for years.
Yes, very highly regarded.
Widely
she was actually on the short list for a lot of GM spots for the last couple of years. And if the Braves have to make some PR moves in order to do it, that might be the way to do it. So,
yeah, you want to get back in the good graces of everybody after a scandal. You know, and break a barrier. Why not?
Right, especially exactly. If it's a supremely qualified candidate. That's not to say just do it just for the PR. She is said by pretty much anyone who knows anything about the game to be one of the brightest minds in the game. So I think, you know, it serves two purposes, then do it. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens. I have no idea what that was that just drove by my house.
I could hear it, man. It was very loud. I could feel like I could just tell how big the wheels were Just off the rumbling. We should leave this in for the listeners.
Yeah, I'm going to. That leaves the Braves. Okay, let's say they go ahead and in November, they pick up a GM, insert GM here. Generic General Manager Johnson. Where does that leave the Braves in terms of how they end this season in terms of roster, personnel, payroll, and where they can start next season in terms of roster, personnel, and payroll?
Well, I don't think Copy's exit is going to, and the sanctions that are going to be involved in it are going to have any effect on the major league roster over the next couple of years. I think that's all going to be lower level where Atlanta gets hit, or even further down the road with, maybe we lose a draft pick. Maybe we're not allowed to sign any players for a year or two on the international market. So I don't think the picture of what the offseason outlook for Atlanta, for the Atlanta Braves at least, I don't think that's changed any since this morning. I think we're still looking at the same issues, the same, payroll decisions that we would have looked at yesterday. So
as it currently sits for 2018, so if we were to the season that just ended going into the next season, the Braves would have 7 players currently allocated to next year's payroll. Kemp, Freeman, Marquez, Teron, Inciarte, Jim Johnson, and Kurt Suzuki are all already signed to contracts for next year. In addition to that, there is a $300,000 buyout versus an $8 million option versus a $4 million option for Tyler Flowers, and a $500,000 buyout versus an $8 million option for R.A. Dickey. I would imagine the Flowers deal, like I said, that's pretty much easy to figure out. That one's going to be picked up. So the Braves would have roughly, I didn't look at the number. Those 7 players total 42, 53, 61, 66, 71, about $75 million just for those 7 players. So that leaves, a lot of guys to sign and fill spots. But at the same time, a lot of the guys we're going to be signing and filling spots for, tendering contracts to, are going to be, your arbitration and pre-arb players who are going to be signing for major league minimums or relatively small salaries. So what do you look like, or what are you thinking the roster looks like in terms of payroll to end the season, to start the season, and where are we going to fill in holes as needed?
Well, the big question is, how much money do the Braves have after 1 year at SunTrust? And I have absolutely no idea. So I can't really project. Let's say they plan on spending an extra $15, $20 million this year over what they've been spending. There's no way I could possibly project that. If for some reason SunTrust wasn't helpful and they're now cutting payroll by $10 to $15 million, there's also no way I could project that. So pretty much what I'm going to do is base off of previous years. And with that in mind, I'm going to go ahead and, just because it's a nice round number, I'm going to pick $125 million as the target for opening day payroll.
That's probably fair. I was thinking it would probably be closer to about 115 to 118. I think the Braves went a little bit high to open 2017 because they wanted to get a couple of named guys, R.A. Dickey and Bartolo Colon, to open up the stadium. One of the keys was to bring in people into the stadium to get this revenue increasing happening. I think now in the second year, I think payroll will drop a little bit, not because they're cutting payroll or anything, just because you don't have a $13 million pitcher on the roster now, just because you don't have a $7 million pitcher on the roster. I mean, that was what, $20 million between those two pitchers that's not going to be on the roster now. It's going to be replaced by roughly $1 million worth of young guys that you're trying to take a good look at.
Yeah, and also Jaime Garcia as well was $12 million. So we were spending 32 million dollars,
$1.5 million
on 3 starting pitchers last year.
And it's not because the Braves are cheap. It's because the guys we want to see, the guys we've been acquiring over the last several years, that's all that they have to play for. That's all the Braves have to pay to see them. Teron is $8 million. Mike Fultonevich, if he stays in the rotation, which I don't think there's any reason to think he won't right now, you know, he's in his first year of arbitration eligibility. He's going to go up from about $575 million or so, or $575,000 that he was making. It's going to be hard to project where his first year arbitration ends because he's not necessarily had the big success that some maybe had projected for him. But starting pitchers who go out and pitch and give innings tend to get decent raises in their first year of arbitration. So I would expect them to hit close to $900,000 or $1 million at the minimum, and maybe as high as $2 million, depending on what some of the, you know, ancillary numbers they use are. But the Braves are going to have significantly lower payroll at the starting pitching position this year. I went through and I just did a breakdown on position by position for the 25-man roster just to see what was lacking. And what I did was, you know, I just put who the player was, what position they played, and a dollar amount in for either what we knew they were going to get or what we estimated they should have based on arbitration raises. And really, the only thing that I was lacking was a third baseman. You know, if they went with Camargo, fine, no big deal. But I was assuming Camargo, Peterson, and Matt Adams on the bench with an empty spot for a third baseman. Counting all of that up, I was sitting at around 89, 90 million in payroll for the Braves to open next year without having a third baseman on the roster. So I think if they were looking at around $110, $115 million, that might give the Braves, you know, it sounds like it would give them $25 million to play with, you know, $30 million to play with, but they like to keep a little bit of money in the back pocket for international free agents, for the draft, for in-season acquisitions. So if they keep, let's say they have $30 million in the back pocket, they keep, or $30 million to use, they keep, you know, $7 or $8 million in the back pocket, that would probably leave them with about $20 to $22 million accessible money, you know, money to spend this year. Will they spend all of that? I don't know. It all depends on what the opening day payroll is going to be. But I think it's going to be closer to 110 to 115 than it is going to be to, you know, 120 or 125.
I guess my question is if we, let's say in 2016, when we decided to go over the international spending allotment, did that extra money come out of, like, did we have to cut back on the major league roster, or had we planned for that separately? Had we already planned the major league budget to allow us to do that?
So they spent less on the major league roster to account for the excess spending in the international pool.
Okay. So that's what I was, I wanted to know if we already sort of planned. So if we are basing off of last year's player payroll, that would already reflect scouting and development budgets, so, yes, and whatnot, and amateur acquisition budgets. Okay. So what I did was I looked at changes. I looked at changes from year to year because I don't really, for me, I thought about trying to find totals, and I'm actually glad we did it different ways because some people will certainly want the big total, like the 80, 90, 100 million or whatever. For me, I don't know. I wanted to look at it a slightly different way just because I don't know what that means in terms of our overall player budget, because our player budget might only be $100 million or it might only be 150, or it might be all the way up to 150 or whatever. So for me, I looked at changes to last year's, changes between 2017 and 2018. And so there are four players who get raises, four players who will be back in uniform next year, and they get raises, raises totaling $6.2 million. And they are Freddie Freeman, who gets a $500,000 raise. Julio Teheran gets a $1.7 million raise. Ender Inciarte gets a $2 million raise. And Kurt Suzuki gets a $2 million raise as well. So $6.2 million increasing just from that. We are losing $39 million in commitments from Brandon Phillips, Bartolo Colon, Jaime Garcia, Emilio Bonifacio, everybody's favorite Brave, Eric O'Flaherty, Josh Kallmenter. And I also included Tyler Flowers and R.A. Dickey in that, only because it's basically just my own accounting trick, sort of, to include them in that. So that's $39 million gone. So that puts us at basically about $33 million free. Now, from there, we do have to account for Tyler Flowers' $3.7 million decision to keep him for next year, which I think we're still in agreement. We're definitely doing that. So that lowers the available money to about $30 million. So I think for this offseason, that's kind of the number I'm looking at, is I think we've got about $30 million for arbitration.
Does yours account for like losing Jason Mott and losing Josh Kolminter?
If I had to guess.
The guys who are free agents?
Well, Kolminter, yes, because he was on a major league contract. Mott, no, because he was a minor league deal that we just turned into major league minimum. So
there's a lot of question as to what the starting point is. We know what the ending point's going to be. You know, we know what players ended the season with the Braves, and we know what they made. And we have a pretty good idea of which players are going to come back. You know, there's some question on some guys, like a Jace Peterson is eligible for arbitration, but is Jace Peterson going to come back, or is he going to be non-tendered? I think at this point I would lean towards Jace Peterson coming back, just because the Braves have always seemed to be talking up his ability as a super utility player. He's not going to be an everyday player, and as long as you don't pay him like one, then you're okay. But there are some other guys like Mauricio Cabrera. Is Mauricio Cabrera going to be tendered a contract this year? Is, you know, Adonis Garcia, you know, is he going to be non-tendered? Yes. Danny Santana is eligible for...
No.
Danny Santana is going to be eligible for arbitration.
No.
Daniel Winkler,
yes,
who still has not fulfilled his Rule 5 obligations, is going to be eligible for arbitration. So there's a lot of guys that the Braves have eligible for arbitration that would normally be on the comeback options that are not going to be, maybe are not going to be in there. And a lot of that depends on who we decide to protect in the Rule 5 draft as well. There's going to be a lot of room to play with, I think.
Yeah, I think that after arbitration raises, my number of $30 million would be lowered to about $24, $25 million or so. I could see Matt Adams getting $1.5 million more. I could see Arodis Vizcaino getting, you know, the same. Right. I could see, I don't think Ian Kroll's getting a big raise. I actually think Ian Kroll might be a non-tender candidate. Jace Peterson, I think we'll offer him arbitration, but I don't think it'll be very high, and I don't think he can command a whole lot. And then Folty, the same kind of. I think it's going to be about in the $1 million range. So let's just say that all things considered, we only have $20 to $25 million to spend on free agency. I actually think that we're probably not going to spend all of that in free agency. And if we use a lot of that money for anything, it will be getting rid of
there's a lot to be said. Let's say they have $25 million available, mm-hmm. and they use 12 of that to facilitate a trade of Matt Kemp, where they don't have to eat the entire amount, but they eat enough of it to move him along to an AL team. I say an AL team because he's clearly a DH at this point in his career, but mm-hmm. move him to wherever it happens to be. That opens up a spot maybe for Ronald Acuna, where the Braves don't have to pay a big name to come in. And that $12 million, it was like signing a $12 million player plus the $500,000 you have to play Acuna to get rid of Matt Kemp. That money being available can also be used to spend to buy down contracts. I think that's a good point that I just completely obliterated with absolutely making no sense whatsoever.
No, I think you made perfect sense. You know, Kemp, yeah, we're still off a little bit on Zencaster. It's can be frustrating. Yes. With Kemp, I mean, he's owed, what, 21.5? Is that right? So if you pay $12 million.
Even if we pay some of it, we're saving money.
Then that means you save $9.5 million. And so I think I would happily pay that much to get rid of him.
Because he still has power. And
I think an American league team could
power is one
justify
of the things
bringing
that has tended
him for
to age well
nine,
over
10
the
million
years.
Bucks.
His on-base percentage is not there. He can't run the bases really well. He can't play the field at all of any significance. So, you know, he's limited in what he can do. But, you know, Matt Kemp still has a reputation as Matt Kemp, former MVP candidate, former power hitter, current less of a power hitter than he was. And pitchers still pitch to reputation to a certain extent. So when you see Matt Kemp coming up to the plate with runners on, it's going to be a lot different than runners on and Jace Peterson coming up to the plate. So that does have value to other teams. It would have value to the Braves if he could play a competent outfield or another position that we could move him to, you know, mitigate the damage that he's doing in the outfield. But I think at this point in his career, he's a DH and is better served by playing on an AL team. And if we can facilitate that by paying, you know, 10, 12 million of the contract to move him, I think it helps us out, because at that point, even if you count the 12 million we're paying, you know, we pay 12 million to move him out of the way. And we pay $500,000 to Ronald Acuna as the major league minimum. You know, we're saving money all the way around. You know, we're saving $8 million that can be going to something else. I like it. I like paying down his deal with Matt Kemp's contract with some of that money. Let's do it. Who do I need to talk to? But that's something we'll have to delve into the future as things come out. It makes it harder to predict what's going to happen when we don't even know which players are going to be kept and which players aren't going to be kept. So rosters have to be set for the Rule 5 draft. The 40-man rosters have to be set by, I think it's the middle of November. So by the middle of November, we'll have a better idea of who's going to be protected and kept and which players are more likely to receive non-tenders. What's funny is the rosters have to be set by mid-November, but contracts to the that have to be tendered to, you know, pre-arb players and arb players, that doesn't happen until later in the off season, until December. So you have a lot of guys who may be on the roster now who may not be on the roster, you know, a month later. It's just one of those weird quirks in the way, you know, where the deadlines for everything are.
I was going to say, as we get closer to the onset of all this stuff, then, you know, as we get closer to the end of the World Series, at that point, we'll do some other podcasts where we go more into detail as to what, you know, what we expect to happen, what we think should happen regarding a lot of player movement. But right now, the Braves clearly have much bigger fish to fry, which is avoiding sanctions as best they can, or at least lessening the severity of them. So,
but it happened, and we have to deal with it. So the Braves have fired their general manager has resigned. They are searching for a new general manager. In the meantime, John Hart has taken over general manager duties, will be making those decisions. In a related story, Jeff Wren has reactivated every Twitter account he ever had and is having fun. You know, a lot of gloating going on his side.
So Jeff Wren, I get that, you know, he was never pleased with the Hart and Coppola regime, but at the same time, it doesn't mean the Wren family did a great job either. Like, just because this one ended in disaster of sorts doesn't mean that you did a better job. It still means you did a bad job. You drafted Sean Gilmartin in the first round. You know, you whiffed on acquiring high ceiling talent in the first round for years, and you gutted our farm system. That's John Coppola. Having his own problems doesn't change what the Wrens did. So, he needs to go back into his hole.
So, got to be somebody. I wish it would have been the Nationals or the Mets or the Marlins. Not us.
Got to be somebody.
But we did it. Let's take our lumps and let's move on.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. You know, these circumstances aren't good, but at the same time, general manager searches are always fun. And so that'll be an interesting thing to watch over the next few weeks. And hopefully we go in a good direction. We make a good choice.
And if you guys want to check it out, we don't we've been talking about this in the Outfield Fly Rule group.
My hope.
You can find that on Facebook, facebook.com/Outfield Fly Rule. That's where we have most of our, I would say, in-depth discussion. We also have the Facebook page, which is where news and information gets posted to on occasion. We also are on the Twitters. We are on the Twitters at OFR Sports. You can check us out. You can also see the articles written by Dylan Short and Andy Harris and Micah Smith and Brent Blackwell. And usually once a year, I'll write something, maybe a little bit less often. But you can check us out on Twitter. You can also, you know, send in questions. We're going to be starting to mailbag back up soon. So send us any questions that you might want answered by people who know absolutely nothing about anything. We'll answer those. And that sounds like it for today. I think today I'm going to go put in my resume for the new general manager's job. Have a good day.